We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, 7th Chapter, verses 1 to 46. Verse 1. Shishivacha Tenagarajam Amantya Falabhaginavasati Parivya Girautas Menitam Abdi Mudan Vitaha Ade Pire Sarayata Mitate Kurutaha. Shri Goswami said, O best of the Kurus, Maharishi Pariksha, the demigods and demons summoned Vasuki, king of the serpents, requesting him to come and promising to give him a share of the nectar. They coiled Vasuki around Mandara Mountain as a churning rope, and with great pleasure they endeavored to produce nectar by churning the ocean of milk. Mukam karati vachala bhangalam kayate kiniyakikandamam vande shri gurum tirachayanam amatyana chimirandasya jananjara sharataya Chakshanichandena Kaswami. So what do you remember from the 6th chapter of this canto? Yes.
Demigods.
Yeah, the demigods went to the ocean.
And they...
Okay, they took over the heavenly planets, so the demigods went to pray to Lord Vishnu. He was shining like so many suns, they couldn't see anything. They could see his form. Okay. What else do you remember, Dhamma Krishna? No, they uprooted Mandara Mountain. They couldn't carry Mandara Mountain. It smashed them up to pieces. Then? So he put it on Guru's back and they all flew to the ocean of milk. Okay, anything else from 6th chapter? Yes. The prayers of the demigods.
Who are headed by Lord Brahma and Shiva.
Aibo, welcome. Qualities of the Lord. Okay, he's transcendental, although he's within all the transformations. So many nice qualities of the Lord. Okay, so we'll go on. Verse 2, we're in 8th canto, 7th chapter. Verse 2. Personality of Godhead Ajita grasped the front portion of the snake, and then the demigods followed. Verse 3. The leaders of the demons thought it unwise to hold the tail, the inauspicious portion of the snake. Instead, they wanted to hold the front, which had been taken by the personality of Godhead and the demigods, because that portion was auspicious and glorious. Thus the demons, on the plea that they were all highly advanced students of Vedic knowledge and were all famous for their birth and activities, protested they wanted to hold the front of the snake. So Prabhupada says that the demons always have to do opposite of the demigods. That is their nature. We have actually seen this in relationship to our Krishna consciousness movement. Oh, here we're going to have all the nice quotes about milk. We were discussing milk in the previous class and how it's wonderful and all the glories of milk. Prabhupada says, we are advocating cow protection and encouraging people to drink more milk. And eat palatable preparations. Oh, who is this? Who?
Everyone.
Well, we got the mercy of everyone today. Nishinga and Gopal and Damodar. These are new everyone's. I haven't seen them before. New deities, Jai. So for the pleasure of everyone, all these different incarnations, we will... Krishna, okay. Krishna in many forms, in different forms. So he is watching over this lila here. Prabhupada says, we are advocating cow protection, encouraging people to drink more milk and eat palatable preparations made of milk. But the demons, just to protest such proposals, are claiming they are advanced in scientific knowledge, as described here by the word swadhyaya shuddha sampanna. They say, according to their scientific way, they have discovered that milk is dangerous and the beef obtained by killing cows is very nutritious. So this is what the demon scientist Prabhupada says. So dangerous, we were discussing about cholesterol. Prabhupada says, this difference of opinion will always continue. Indeed, it has existed since days of yore. Millions of years ago, there was the same competition. The demons, as a result of their so-called Vedic study, preferred to hold the side of the snake near the mouth. Supreme Personality of Godhead thought it wise to catch hold of the dangerous part of the snake and allow the demons to hold the tail, which was not dangerous. But because of a competitive desire, the demons thought it wise to hold the snake near the mouth. If the demigods were going to drink poison, the demons would resolve, why should we not share the poison and die gloriously by drinking it? So just the Prabhupada is explaining to us the mentality of the demons. If they're going to die gloriously, we should die gloriously, taking the poison, the head of the snake. So Prabhupada asks a question. If one is actually educated in Vedic knowledge, as these demons are saying, famous for performing prescribed duties and born in a great aristocratic family, why should he be called a demon? So why? What is the answer? Why is he a demon if he's so advanced in Vedic knowledge? He's so doing, performing prescribed duties. This is verse 3, purport. Yes. Okay, very good. What makes a demon, in other words? What makes a person a demon? They don't remember the Lord? Yeah, Jaini Tai.
But
if he is godless.
If he is godless.
Yes.
If he does not listen to the instructions of God.
If he doesn't. Yes. So just as somebody quoted Nasasiddhim of Apnoti. Yay. Shastra Vidhum Utsrija, who gives up the Shastric injunctions, if he's godless, he's a demon. There are many examples in history of men like Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, and Kamsa, who were well educated, born in aristocratic families, very powerful and chivalrous in fighting, but who, because of deriding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were called Rakshasas, or demons. One may be very well educated, but if he has no sense of Krishna consciousness, no obedience to the Supreme Lord, he is a demon. And Prabhupada's final conclusion is, what do we call the demons and what does Krishna call them? No, we don't say. No, from Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, asura, that's one word. Asuram bhavam, yes. Mudha, yes, mudha. He is a demon. And so there was a Back to Godhead article about drinking milk. And the person who wrote the article said that, you know, they say that milk, the cholesterol is too high. So a vegetarian could drink a quart of milk and eat a few ounces of cheese without topping the maximum allowance if you take vegetables along with it. Fruits, grains, and vegetables. You take your fruits, grains, and vegetables and a little milk and then you won't get your cholesterol. And yeah. And if you don't take milk, he says you're doomed to consume piles of algae, seaweed, sesame seeds, or pills to obtain essential vitamin B12 and calcium. Doomed to seaweed. Seaweed, algae, all these different things. Now, there's some glories of milk as a medicine. This is another BTG article. This is in the recipes. The recipe is almond milk. So they say the problem with today, the way people take milk is because they serve it ice cold. They don't heat it up. And they say this is very bad. This causes allergy, digestive problem, high fat, so many things. So to aid in digestion, Ayurveda recommends boiling milk 3 times and serving it hot or warm, but never ice cold. So then it tells how milk can be used as a medicine. If milk disagrees with you, try adding a slice of fresh ginger or a pinch of turmeric to the milk before boiling it. Before you drink it, sweeten it to taste with honey. If you take ginger milk at night, hot, it calms the mind and nourishes the body. Adding cardamom to hot milk helps reduce mucus-forming properties. Teaspoon of ghee in hot milk at bedtime helps relieve constipation. So there you have milk as a medicine. This is from BTG. Srila Prabhupada liked to take hot milk at night, drinking it from a silver cup. Okay? So, with a spoon. So here we have the glories of milk. And this is one of the themes of these purports that we've been hearing in this chapter. Anything to get back at the scientists. So verse 4. Thus the demons remained silent, opposing the desire of the demigods. Seeing the demons and understanding their motive, the personality of Godhead smiled. Without discussion, he immediately accepted their proposal by grasping the tail of the snake, and the demigods followed him. So Burijam Prabhu is saying that the Lord is using reverse psychology here on the demons. That actually, the mouth is the worst part. So he went and took the mouth first. And then they wanted it because that's where the demigods were. So then he said, okay, you take this. We'll take the tail. Reverse psychology means if you want somebody to do something, especially a teenager, you tell them to do the opposite. And they will do the opposite. They will do the opposite of what you tell them to do, and it's what you want them to do. And so sometimes you have to use reverse psychology on a child or a teenager. Burijan says the Lord is using it here. Verse 5. After thus adjusting how the snake was to be held, sometimes you have meetings and you know you're just hung up on some technical little thing. So here, they're going to fight on everything. The first is where to hold the snake. After thus adjusting how the snake was to be held, sons of Kashyap, both demigods and demons, began their activities, desiring to get nectar by churning the ocean of milk. O son of the Pandu dynasty, when Mandara Mountain was thus being used as a churning rod in the ocean of milk, it had no support, and therefore, although held by the strong hands of the demigods and demons, it sank into the water. Because the mountain had been sunk by the strength of providence, the demigods and demons were disappointed, and their faces seemed to shrivel. Do we have any commentaries? Oh, verse 4. Okay. Verse 4, we have a commentary on Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. The Lord is smiling, and this means by choosing conceit, you are going to be burned by the fire of poison. So he was smiling because the demigods were choosing the wrong side. So verse 8, seeing the situation that had been created by the will of the Supreme, the unlimitedly powerful Lord, whose determination is infallible, took the wonderful shape of a tortoise, entered the water, and lifted the great Mandara Mountain. So here in the purport, there's an interesting discussion by Srila Prabhupada. One of the themes in these purports is the difference between demigods and demons and their attitude towards things. So we heard in the last purports in Chapter 6 how they believe in the theory of chance, whereas devotees believe that behind everything is the hand of the Lord. So here's another difference of opinion between the demons and the demigods in this purport. Okay, suppose you're a demon and some hindrance comes to you, some obstacle. How does a demon think?
Bad luck.
Bad luck, yes?
It's someone else's fault.
It's his fault. Yes.
Someone's out to get me.
Yes. Hari Purush. I will try to overcome it by my strength. Okay? Still didn't get... Yes?
It's not fair.
Huh? It's not fair. Why me? Why did it happen to me? Of all people. Yes?
I wish the same thing happened.
I wish somebody else would have this problem. Why I get it? Yes, exactly. That's the nature of this world. Why my neighbor doesn't have this and I have this problem? Why me? Yes. Why my enemy doesn't have this problem? So what Prabhupada says is that everyone has experienced that hindrances are imposed upon us by the supreme power. Demons regard these hindrances as mere accidents or chance. There we go again. Same thing. It's an accident. But devotees accept them to be acts of the supreme ruler. When faced with hindrances, therefore devotees pray to the Lord. Tate nukampam. Susamikshamana punjana evatma kritam vipakam. Devotees, yes, endure hindrances, accepting them to be caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, regarding them as benedictions. So, lucky me. Krishna took everything away from me. Isn't that wonderful? Yes, but no. The demon would say, what? This, why is this happening to me? No. So this is, it's such a difference in attitude. And someday we should have this attitude as a devotee. Demons, however, are being unable to understand the Supreme Controller, regard such hindrances as accidental. Here, of course, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present personally. It was by his will there were hindrances, and by his will those hindrances were removed. Lord appeared as a tortoise to support the great mountain. The Lord held the great mountain on his back. Keshavachita kurma sharira jaya jagadisha hare. Dangers can be created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They can also be removed by him. This is known to devotees, but demons cannot understand it. So in the fifth canto, we heard some prayers by the residents of Hiranmayavarsh. They pray to Kurma, and they think, they pray to him that, oh, this is such a dear and beautiful form. How is the form of Kurma beautiful?
Smiling.
He's smiling. Yes, he's smiling. If you see a picture of Kurma, he's got a beautiful smile. Yes.
He's enjoying.
Yeah, he's smiling because he's having... He's getting a nice massage on his back. The Mandara Mountain. Okay, he's happy. That's why he's beautiful. When the Lord is happy, we think, oh, this is so nice. So it's pleasing to the devotees. It's very beautiful. Yes, so... So Prabhupada says that all the Lord's incarnations are very beautiful and appreciated as such by devotees. Non-devotees think, however, Lord Krishna's incarnations are ordinary material creatures, and they distinguish between the beautiful and the not beautiful. So remember Varaha incarnation, how he became beautiful? Remember what he did to make himself so beautiful? Remember third canto, Varaha. Long time ago that was, third canto. Many years ago we read that.
He shook
all the drops of water unto everyone. And Kusha grass he created. Okay, that's one thing. But how did he become beautiful? You remember that pastime?
He roared,
yes.
Lifting the earth.
Okay, I was also thinking he turned bluish, sham color, like Krishna. Yeah, he turned bluish. No. He showed that he was Sham, Krishna. Okay, Varaha. Varaha is beautiful. So I'll just read one prayer by the residents of Hiranmayavarsh. Om Namo Bhagavate Akuparaya Sat Sarvasattva Guna Visheshanaya Nupalakshita Stanaya Namo Vaishmane Namo Bhumne Namo Namo Vastanaya Namaste. I offer respectful obeisances to Lord Tortoise, the reservoir of all transcendental qualities, untinged by matter, perfectly situated in pure goodness. You move here and there in the water, but no one can discern your position. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Because of your transcendental position, you are not limited by past, present, and future. You are present everywhere as a shelter of all things. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you again and again. Patri, do we have a Varaha over here? A Varaha Kurma? Anybody? Most probably. They're so small you can't tell. Okay, well, yes. Okay, he wants to know, is there an eternal Kurma avatar somewhere in the spiritual world? Adipurush says yes. It's in Briha Bhagavatamrita that this is an eternal incarnation. Okay. He appeared. Yes. Well, it was what I caught here was in a previous verse. It says that Ajita. Ajita is the name of the Kurma incarnation. And before the tortoise appeared, then in the previous verse it says Ajita was helping the demigods here and some other. He was, let's see. Yeah, in another form. I think so here. Ajita. Ajita is in verse 2. Personality of Godhead, Ajita, grasped the front portion of the snake. And then the demigods followed. So it seems that here, it says in verse 2, he grasped it, and then later on, seeing that the situation, the Lord, whose determination took the shape of a tortoise, that's that same Ajita who was grasping the front of the snake, and then he went into the water. It says he entered the water, he took the shape of a tortoise, entered the water, and lifted the mountain. So that makes me think that it's, he took the shape. Yeah, that's after. Yes, he goes on top after. So this time he went in the water. He wasn't there already. He didn't just come. Okay. So here's another prayer. Jayadeva Goswami will read the whole prayer. Kshitiriha vipulatare tishtati tava priste tani taranakina chakra gariste keshavajita kurma sharira jaya chakadishare jaya chakadishare jaya chakadishare. So Srila Prabhupada explained in his, there's a lecture on the first canto, third chapter, 16th verse, describing kurma, that what was happening, they were in the ocean of milk, and the demigods and the demons were standing knee-deep in the ocean. And do you know how deep that ocean was? 7 miles. 7 miles, and they were standing knee-deep, churning the ocean. He says, if they're not standing in the ocean, how can they churn? It's not like it was over their heads. They were standing in knee-deep water, 7 miles deep. He says, for an ant, 7 inches is enough. For you, 7 feet is enough.
And the Mandara Mountain had sunk?
Yes, it sunk. Well, it sunk, 7 miles.
They stood on the bank.
Yeah, they were on the bank. Well, it went 7 miles in, and they couldn't get it out. So, of course, it's much bigger. It's, 10,000 yojanas high. But they couldn't, it just sank in, and when it's down there, you can't churn the ocean. It has to be, you can't churn. So then the tortoise went underneath, and they had a very good churning place for it to sit. They're very tall, yes.
So 7 miles
knee deep?
Knee deep,
7 miles, Prabhupada says. Yeah, they were near the bank. They weren't out in the middle of the ocean. They were near, not too far out. Yeah, they must be. So if 7 miles is up to their knees, and you can imagine how big the demigods and demons, both of them, they were both very big. Same father, Kashyap. So verse 9, when the demigods and demons saw Mandara Mountain had been lifted, they were enlivened and encouraged to begin churning again. The mountain rested on the back of the great tortoise, which extended for 800,000 miles, like a large island. 800,000 miles, okay? Verse 10, O King, when the demigods and demons, by the strength of their arms, rotated Mandara Mountain on the back of the extraordinary tortoise, the tortoise accepted the rolling of the mountain as a means of scratching his body, and thus he felt a pleasing sensation. So in the 12th canto, 13th chapter, verse 2, there's an interesting verse about kurma. It said, his back was being scratched by the sharp-edged stones on Mount Mandara. And this scratching made him sleepy. He was feeling sleepy. You know, when you get, sometimes you get a massage and you start falling asleep. So he was getting this nice massage and he was falling asleep. And he started breathing heavily, when you sleep. And so the verse says, may you all be protected by the winds caused by the Lord's breathing in this sleepy condition. Ever since that time, even up to the present day, the ocean tides have imitated the Lord's inhalation and exhalation by piously coming in and going out. So the tides coming in and going out, it's from the breathing, originally from the breathing of tortoise, of Lord Kurma. Because his breathing, then the tides are going in and coming out. You know how long it takes for it to go in and to come out. I live by the ocean, so I know. I lived in Goa for 5 years, and I used to watch.
6 hours?
6 hours?
To go out and come
Yeah.
To
12 hours, okay. 12 hours. And then, but every day, it comes like a little closer. It's by the moon also, just like the moon is rising at a different time. So the tides, you'll get high tide like an hour later every day. It comes later and later. And that takes 2 weeks. 2 weeks at a tide. So it seems like his breath here was like taking one breath, one inhalation, 24 hours, exhalation. Inhaling 12 hours, exhaling 12 hours. And so 24 hours is one breath for Lord Tortoise here. And so these are little interesting details about Lord Tortoise. And the purport is quite interesting on this, about the breathing of Lord Tortoise. Prabhupada says it. This is not Prabhupada. This is whoever translated it. Gopi Pranadana. At times we alleviate an itching sensation by blowing upon it. Similarly, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains. So it's by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. What happens? The breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can alleviate the itching sensation within the minds of mental speculators. So mental speculators, if they're meditating on the breathing of karma, they will relieve the itching sensation of their speculation, as well as itching of material senses of conditioned souls engaged in sense gratification. Thus, by meditating on the windy breath of Lord Karma, all categories of conditioned souls can be relieved of deficiencies of material existence and come to the liberated spiritual platform. One must simply allow the pastimes of Lord Karma to blow within one's heart like a favorable breeze. Then one will surely find spiritual peace. So, very nice result from hearing the pastime of Lord Tortoise. Yes. His head was up. But anyway, the turtles can breathe, I think, underwater. These amphibian creature. Anyway, I don't know the science about turtles, but the Lord can breathe anywhere. They put their heads up? Okay. Yeah, but he was breathing underwater because the tides are moving according to his breath. Yes. Yeah, I didn't say. Sukadev says.
Yeah, so it's like an island.
Yeah, well, his back is like an island. Yeah.
So he was like floating like an island.
Yeah, he was up there.
But how they will train.
How they will. Anyway, you just meditate on it and the answers will come. Yes. We're on verse 11. Thereafter, Lord Vishnu entered the demons as the quality of passion, the demigods as the quality of goodness, and Vasuki as the quality of ignorance, to encourage them and increase the various types of strength and energy. So see, in this pastime, he's helping everyone. He's helping the demons, he's helping the demigods, and he's helping Vasuki, who's in the mode of ignorance. He's encouraging everyone. Prabhupada says in the purport, everyone is under different modes. There are three different parties in the churning. The demigods who are in mode of goodness, demons in the mode of passion, and snake Vasuki in the mode of ignorance. Since they were all becoming tired, Vasuki, so much so, he was almost going to die. Lord Vishnu, to encourage them to continue the work of churning the ocean, entered into them according to their respective modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. So he entered the demigods as goodness. He entered the demons as passion. He entered Vasuki as ignorance and helped them all out in this. So actually he's doing everything, even if they don't know it. Remember there's a verse in 7th canto, beginning of 7th canto, verse 8, chapter 1, that when the quality of goodness is prominent, the sage and demigods flourish, and with which they are infused and surcharged by the Lord. When the mode of passion is prominent, the demons flourish, and ignorance, the yakshas and rakshasas. The Supreme Lord is in everyone's heart, and he's giving all of these reactions to sattva, raja, and tama. So he's infusing goodness, passion, and ignorance in all the different parties. Verse 12, manifesting himself with thousands of hands, the Lord then appeared on the summit of Mandara Mountain, like another great mountain, and held Mandara Mountain with one hand. In the upper planetary systems, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, along with Indra, King of Heaven, and other demigods, offered prayers to the Lord and showered flowers upon him. So Lord Shiva and Brahma, they were not participating, but they were up in heavenly planets offering prayers. Demigods and demons worked almost madly for the nectar, encouraged by the Lord, who was above and below the mountain, and who had entered the demigods, demons, Vasuki, and the mountain itself. So not only he entered all of them, he entered the mountain. So where wasn't he? Where wasn't the Lord at this point? He was everywhere. He was all pervading, really, in this Leela. Because of the strength of the demigods and demons, the ocean of milk was so powerfully agitated, all the alligators in the water were very much perturbed. Nonetheless, the churning of the ocean continued in this way. Does anybody remember, it's going to happen in Ninth Canto. There's another place where all the alligators and everybody in the ocean gets perturbed. Yes. Lord Ram glances angrily at the ocean and they all get disturbed. So this is going to happen again in Ninth Canto. Verse 14, Vasuki had thousands of eyes and mouths. From his mouths he breathed smoke and blazing fire, which affected the demons headed by Paloma, Kalaya, Bali, and Ilvala. Thus the demons, who appeared like sarala trees burned by a forest fire, gradually became powerless. Because the demigods were also affected by the blazing breath of Vasuki, their bodily lusters diminished, and their garments, garlands, weapons, and faces were blackened by smoke. However, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, clouds appeared on the sea, pouring torrents of rain, and breezes blew, carrying particles of water from the sea waves to give the demigods relief. Not the demons, huh? Yes, see? Not fair. Not fair. The rain is only coming on the demigod's side. Okay. Well, if it was torrents, yes. Oh yeah, I think that's explained in some commentary somewhere. He was actually climbing up the mountain. I read that. I don't remember where I read it. That he was climbing, he was holding on the mountain and climbing up, and he was holding it with one hand first, and then he climbed up there. To climb up, he was holding it. It's in the purport. Now, where is that purport? I should have read that. To balance Mandara Mountain, while it was being pulled from both sides, the Lord himself appeared on its summit like another great mountain. That doesn't explain. Anyway, we'll probably get to it in some commentary or some purport somewhere. So, now we are in verse 16. When nectar did not come from the ocean of milk, despite so much endeavor by the best of the demigods and demons, the Supreme Personality of God, Ajita, personally began to churn the ocean. So this appears like he's expanding again, Ajita. He's in many places at once. He's on top of the mountain. He's under the mountain. And now he's coming out to help them churn. He was there before, but it sounds like he went in the water. Now he's coming back out to help them all churn the ocean. Yes, four-armed form. Mishutata. We saw his appearance in chapter 6. He appeared. He appeared in chapter 6. And now he's helping them out. And now it's going to give his description here. In chapter verse 17, Lord appeared like a blackish cloud. He was dressed with yellow garments. His earrings shone in his ears like lightning, and his hair spread over his shoulders. He wore a garland of flowers, and his eyes were pinkish. With his strong, glorious arms, which award fearlessness throughout the universe, he took hold of Vasuki and began churning the ocean using Mandara Mountain as a churning rod. When engaged in this way, the Lord appeared like a beautifully situated mountain named Indranila. The fish, sharks, tortoises, and snakes were most agitated and perturbed. The entire ocean became turbulent, and even the large aquatic animals like whales, water elephants, what's a water elephant? crocodiles and timingila fish. Large whales and can swallow small whales, came to the surface. While the ocean was being churned in this way, it first produced a fiercely dangerous poison called hala. Hala. This is poison. O king, when that uncontrollable poison was forcefully spreading up and down in all directions, all the demigods, along with the Lord himself, approached Lord Shiva, Sadashiva. Feeling unsheltered and very much afraid, they sought shelter of him. Purport. One may question, since Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present, why did he accompany all the demigods and people in general to take shelter of Lord Shiva, Sadashiva, instead of intervening himself? And what is the answer? This is now the Lord Shiva Bhaktas are going to be very happy. Yes.
He wanted to give the credit.
Wanted to give the credit to Shiva. Good. That's what the purport says here. Any other, that's the main reason. So I have a commentary from Biha Bhagavatamrita here that although Krishna was personally present at the churning of nectar from the milk ocean, he and the rulers of the universe chose to worship Lord Shiva, life and soul of Gauri. Lord Shiva collected and drank the terrible poison, which thereafter became his ornament. He was then ceremonially bathed in the presence of everyone assembled and was glorified with floods of praise. So now we're going to hear the floods of praise. Everyone's going to pray to Lord Shiva now. Verse 20. The demigods observe Lord Shiva sitting on the summit of Kailash Hill with his wife Bhavani. So they're doing a lot of traveling here. Now from the ocean of milk, they're going to Kailash. For the auspicious development of the three worlds, he was being worshipped by great saintly persons desiring liberation. The demigods offered him their obeisances and prayers with great respect. Prajapati said, O greatest of all demigods, Mahadev, supersoul of all living entities and cause of their happiness and prosperity, we have come to the shelter of your lotus feet. Now please save us from this fiery poison which is spreading all over the three worlds. So Prabhupada asks the question, since Lord Shiva is in charge of annihilation, why should he be approached for protection which is given by Lord Vishnu? And the answer is, why did they go there? Of course, we know why Lord Vishnu went there, to give the credit to Lord Shiva. Now, why did the rest of them go there? He's in charge of annihilation.
Guna avatar.
Okay. Prabhupada says that they're Shaktivesh avatars endowed with a special power like that of Lord Vishnu, who is actually all-pervading in their activities. So he's one of the great controllers. And now all these prayers, they sound like prayers to Lord Vishnu. So Prabhupada's explaining, whenever prayers for protection are offered to Lord Shiva, actually Lord Vishnu is indicated, for otherwise Lord Shiva is meant for destruction. Lord Shiva is one of the Ishwaras or controllers known as Shaktivesh avatars, therefore he can be addressed as having the qualities of Lord Vishnu. And in Nectar Devotion it's described, he has 55%, or 55 of the qualities, not 55%. He has 84 or 85%, and which is 55 qualities. Verse 22, O Lord, you are the cause of bondage and liberation of the entire universe because you are its ruler. Those who are advanced in spiritual consciousness surrender unto you. Therefore, you are the cause of mitigating their distresses, and you are also the cause of their liberation. We therefore worship your lordship. So who is this prayer for? Lord Vishnu, appearing through Lord Shiva. Actually, Prabhupada says, Lord Vishnu maintains and accomplishes all good fortune. If one has to take shelter of Lord Vishnu, why should the demigods take shelter of Lord Shiva? They did so because Lord Vishnu acts through Lord Shiva in creation of the material world. So see, actually Lord Shiva is there not only in annihilation, he's there in creation. How is he there in creation? He carries the glance. He's not the glance. He carries the glance of the Lord and he delivers it to Maya, Durga. Yes?
I think we're here thinking about Lord Sadashiva.
Sadashiva, yes. Sadashiva.
I've heard that there's a difference between Rudra.
Yeah, Sadashiva is the origin of Lord Shiva. The origin. He's pure. There is a Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets. But actually, so they're offering prayers to Sadashiva, actually. Although Sadashiva's representative here on this earth is Lord Shiva up in Kailash. So therefore, they were praying to that Shiva. They went to Kailash, and that's where Lord Shiva is. So, but they're praying to Sadashiva, who is his superior, his source. No, this Shiva is not Vishnu Tattva, but their prayers are directed towards Vishnu Tattva. The Shiva that they're praying to is not Vishnu Tattva. He's in Kailash. Sadashiva is Vishuddha. Sadashiva. Sadashiva. Advaita Prabhu. Advaita Prabhu is Sadashiva. So here, he acts in the creation. Lord Shiva acts on behalf of Lord Vishnu. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, he is the father of all living entities. Aham bija pradapita. This refers to actions performed by Lord Vishnu through Lord Shiva. Did you know that? Aham bija pradapita is Vishnu acting through Shiva. Because where are we getting these material bodies from? It's from Vishnu acting through Lord Shiva. Lord Vishnu is always unattached to material activities. When material activities are to be performed, Lord Vishnu performs them through Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is therefore worshipped on the level of Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu is untouched by the external energy. He is Lord Vishnu. But when he is in touch with the external energy, he appears in this feature as Lord Shiva. Very important point, that if Lord Vishnu touches Durga, he's not Lord Vishnu, he's Shiva. He never touches. So Bhrijan gave an explanation. When a man speaks at the United Nations, then he represents his country. So if that representative is disrespected, the people of his country are disrespected. If he votes on behalf of his country. So this is Lord Shiva. He's a representative now of Vishnu. In this capacity, he's accepting their offering prayers, and he's accepting prayers. 23. O Lord, you are self-effulgent and supreme. You create this material world by your personal energy, and you assume the names Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara when you act in creation, maintenance, and annihilation. So obviously, as Prabhupada says in the purport, this is offered to Lord Vishnu. 24. You are the cause of all causes, self-effulgent, inconceivable, and personal Brahman, which is originally Para Brahman. You manifest various potencies in this cosmic manifestation. So we have a commentary we'll go back to verse 22. If Lord Shiva asks, why are you approaching me? Go to Vishnu, he's the maintainer. So demigods are replying, you are one, there are certainly not many gods. Therefore you and Vishnu are one and the same. The only difference is one is coming in touch with the modes and the other is not. In verse 23, comment by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he is worshipped as Purusha Avatar. And what is this SP? Srila Prabhupada says the same thing. Okay, Vishnu is being worshipped here through Lord Shiva. In 24, same thing. Prabhupada is saying worshipped as Nirvishesha Brahman and as Vishnu. So purport 24. This verse is offered to the impersonal Brahman, which consists of the effulgent rays of Parabrahman. Parabrahman is the supreme personality of Godhead. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitam, Paramam Bhavan. When Lord Shiva is worshipped as Parabrahman, the worship is meant for Lord Vishnu. So Prabhupada is repeating again and again, don't get confused. They are not praying to Lord Shiva, they are praying to Lord Vishnu. Although it looks like they are praying to Lord Shiva. And if somebody is a Shiva Bhakta, they'll definitely say, just see, Vishnu into Lord Shiva. So Prabhupada is explaining everything to us so we know the actual tattva. 25. And we'll get some comments. There will be a verse at the end of these prayers where Lord Shiva says something which definitely proves that Lord Vishnu is superior and who is the supreme. So verse 25, O Lord, you are the original source of Vedic literature. You are the original cause of material creation, the life force, the senses, five elements, three modes, and Mahatattva. You are eternal time, determination, and two religious systems called truth, satya, and truthfulness, rita. You are the shelter of the syllable om, which consists of three letters, A, U, and M. O Father of all planets, learned scholars know that fire is your mouth, the surface of the globe is your lotus feet, eternal time is your movement, all the directions are your ears, and Varuna, master of waters, is your tongue. O Lord, the sky is your navel, the air is your breathing, the sun is your eyes, and the water is your semen. You are the shelter of all kinds of living entities, high and low. The god of the moon is your mind, and the upper planetary system is your head. So who is this? Lord Shiva? Sounds like Lord Shiva? It's actually universal form now. O Lord, You are the three Vedas personified. The seven seas are your abdomen. The mountains are your bones. All drugs, creepers, and vegetables are the hairs on your body. The Vedic mantras like Gayatri are the seven layers of your body. And the Vedic religious system is the core of your heart. O Lord, the five important Vedic mantras are represented by your five faces. Now, who is this? This sounds like Lord Shiva. So this verse is directed to Lord Shiva, from which the 38 most celebrated Vedic mantras have been generated. Your Lordship being celebrated as Lord Shiva is self-illuminated. You are directly situated as the Supreme Truth known as Paramatma. So this is all these mantras. These are mantras chanted by Lord Shiva. Verse 30, O Lord, your shadow is seen in irreligion, which brings about varieties of irreligious creations. The three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are your three eyes. So this verse also sounds like Lord Shiva. He has three eyes. No, the description in this verse. He has three eyes, he has five faces. So the last two verses are more specific. Yeah, that sounds like Vishnu. So you have to be very discriminating when you read these verses here. Your shadow is seen in irreligion. All the Vedic literatures which are full of verses are emanations from you because their compilers wrote the various scriptures after receiving your glance. Verse 31, O Lord Girisha. Now he's being very specific. Since the impersonal Brahman effulgence is transcendental to the material modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, the various directors of this material world certainly cannot appreciate it or even know where it is. It is not understandable even to Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, or the King of Heaven, Mahendra. So we'll go to the middle of the purport, where it says, Mayavadis, who prefer to merge into this Brahman effulgence, worship Lord Shiva. The mantras referred to in text 29 are called Mukhani Panchopanishadastavesha. Mayavadis take all these mantras seriously in worshipping Lord Shiva. So now we're getting more explicit here in these later verses. Now in the last paragraph, Prabhupada says, the impersonal Brahman is unknown even to the other directors of the material creation, including Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, and even Lord Vishnu. How is it Lord Vishnu doesn't know Brahman? Prabhupada explains, this does not mean, however, that Lord Vishnu is not omniscient. Lord Vishnu is omniscient, and he does not need to understand what is going on in his all-pervading expansion. Okay? So omniscient doesn't mean that he always knows everything that's going on. Omniscient, here it says, he doesn't need to know. Just like there's an example in Krishna Lila, which we're hearing now, and that Balaram, he's the Supreme Lord, he's Supreme Personality of Godhead, but when Brahma stole the cowherd boys and calves from Lord Krishna, then even Balaram didn't know. It happened on his birthday. It was Balaram Avirbhav, Balaram Jayanti. It was on Purnima because Balaram didn't go with Krishna that day to herd the cows. He stayed back for his birthday. So this Brahma, he stole everything, and even Balaram didn't know that Krishna expanded himself. So how is this possible? Balaram's omniscient? How come he didn't know all these things were happening? Lila Shakti, yes?
He didn't need to know.
Yes? He didn't want to know. Yes? Okay, Balaram is equal, but Krishna is higher. And it would have, there's some beautiful reasons, I don't know if I can remember them, that it would have, oh yes, why Krishna didn't let him know for 1 year, actually. Just before Brahma came back, then he allowed Balaram to understand, this is happening. He was covered by Yoga Maya, because Balaram would have felt too much separation from Sudama and Tridama and the other cowherd boys. So therefore, Krishna didn't cover him and made him not know. So then what happened at the end when he saw how much affection these parents, the gopis and the cows were having for their calves, they were neglecting the baby calves and they were feeding their big calves. So Balaram started thinking, what's going on here? I thought before these were all great sages and now it seems to me they're all Krishna because everyone loves them just like they love Krishna. So then one of the commentators said, Balaram invoked his omniscient shakti, omniscient potency. And then he could understand that it was actually Krishna. And so he's thinking, what is this? Are these sages? Are they Krishna? What's going on here? So yes, omniscient. Sometimes he's omniscient, sometimes he's not. It doesn't mean, I mean, of course, he's omniscient. He's omniscient. He knows everything. He's a big gya. But here's one example. He doesn't need to understand what's going on in his Brahman. It's not very interesting also what's going on in Brahman. Not much going on in Brahman, actually. What's going on in Brahman? Actually, there's nothing happening.
Material world is situated.
Yes, material world. That's also not very interesting for the Lord. What's happening in the material world? Birth, death, disease, and old age, again and again. Of course, he comes as he's coming right now. He's coming to do this lila. So here we go. We're in this last paragraph of the purport. In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, the Lord says, although everything is an expansion of him, maya tatam idam sarvam, he does not need to take care of everything, chaham tesh vavastitaha, since there are various directors like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Indra. So why should he bother? Let Lord Shiva take care of it. Lord Brahma and Lord Indra, why should he bother with what's happening here in this Brahma Jyoti? So then Jiva Goswami and Paramatma Sundarbha give some evidence here why Lord Shiva is not supreme. One evidence is when you hear in Bhagavatam the birth of Dattatreya, Soma, and Durvasa. Remember that? The three of them. One is sons of Atri. One was born as a partial incarnation of Vishnu, one Brahma, and one Shiva. But why only Dattatreya is in the list? Why not Soma and Durvasa? Why aren't they in the list of incarnations? Yes, because Dattatreya is Vishnu. Why not Durvasa? If Lord Shiva is the same as Vishnu, then why isn't Durvasa an incarnation? No, because he's not in the list. So Lord Shiva, here's some more evidence by Jiva Goswami and Paramatma Sundarbha. Lord Shiva is speaking to his six-mouthed son. Who's that six-mouthed son? Kartikeya, in Skanda Purana. And he's giving him some very good advice. He's saying in the Shiva Shastras, one should only accept those portions glorifying Vishnu and neglect those portions saying Lord Shiva is supreme. This is Lord Shiva's advice to his son. For that is to bewilder the people. If one doesn't follow this law, he'll become confused and bewildered about Shastra. So then he says, even Sadashiva, these names, they refer to Lord Krishna. Power of the demigods is coming from the original source, Krishna. And when in Bhagavatam, when the three lords were asked who is superior, it was clear Vishnu is supreme. So then he considers from another point of view, it may be said Lord Shiva's effulgence described in this verse. Now here, okay, even if you say this effulgence is that of Lord Shiva, it's the home of all-knowing Lord Vishnu, who is known as Paramatma or Super Soul. So this is the technicality of why they call him Paramatma. It's the home of Lord Vishnu, Paramatma. Understood in this way, it is quite proper Lord Shiva's effulgence is beyond the living entity's understanding. So there you have it. So this is Paramatma Sundarbha of Jiva Goswami. Verse 32, when annihilation is performed by the flames and sparks, so this sounds like Lord Shiva, emanating from your eyes, the entire creation is burned to ashes. Nonetheless, you do not know how this happens. What then is to be said of your destroying the Daksha Yagya, Triparashura, and Kalakut poison? Such activities cannot be subject matters for prayers offered to you. So they're hinting what they want him to do. You drink this poison, please. It's nothing for you. It's not a very difficult thing. 33. Exalted, self-satisfied persons who preach to the entire world think of your lotus feet constantly within their hearts. However, when persons who do not know your austerity see you moving with Uma, they misunderstand you to be lusty. Or when they see you wandering in the crematorium, they mistakenly think you are ferocious and envious. Certainly, they are shameless. They cannot understand your activities. Prabhupada says, Vaishnavanam yathashambhu and Vaishnavar kriya mudra vigeha nabhujai. Even the most intelligent person cannot understand what a Vaishnava like Lord Shiva is doing or how He is acting. So don't try to understand, Prabhupada says, and if you criticize, you're shameless. Don't criticize Lord Shiva. And Daksha, he criticized. He lives in filthy places, like crematoriums. His companions are ghosts and demons. Naked like a madman, sometimes laughing, crying. He smears the dust all over his body from the crematorium. He doesn't bathe regularly. He ornaments himself with skulls and bones. He is very dear to crazy people in the mode of ignorance, and he is their leader. So that was Daksha's criticism. But actually, we find that Lord Shiva is Dharma Vatsala. He's the best follower of religious principles, and he simply tries to help these lowest and lowest people. What was that? He was the guru for the moving and the non-moving living entities. Guru for both. So verse 34, even personalities like Lord Brahma and other demigods cannot understand your position, for you are beyond the moving and non-moving creation. Since no one can understand you in truth, how can one offer you prayers? It is impossible. As far as we are concerned, we are creatures of Lord Brahma's creation. Under the circumstances, therefore, we cannot offer you adequate prayers. But as far as our ability allows, we have expressed our feelings. O greatest of all rulers, your actual identity is impossible for us to understand. As far as we can see, your presence brings flourishing happiness to everyone. Beyond this, no one can appreciate your activities. We see this much and nothing more. So again, they're asking to rectify this disturbing situation, Prabhupada says. They want to please Lord Shiva. Prabhupada says, this is kamaisthaista hritagyana. They've lost their intelligence because they have some motive. They want something from him, and so they're worshipping Lord Shiva. Verse 36, Shishukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Shiva is always benevolent toward all living entities. When he saw the living entities were very much disturbed by the poison which was spreading everywhere, he was very compassionate. Thus he spoke to his eternal consort, Sati, as follows. Lord Shiva said, my dear Bhavani, just see how all these living entities have been placed in danger because of the poison produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. It is my duty to give protection and safety to all living entities struggling for existence. Certainly, it is the duty of the master to protect his suffering dependents. People in general, being bewildered by the illusory energy of a supreme personality of Godhead, are always engaged in animosity toward one another. But devotees, even at the risk of their own temporary lives, try to save them. Prabhupada says this is the Vaishnava para dukkha dukkhi. He's unhappy to see conditioned souls unhappy. Otherwise, he has no business teaching them how to be happy. He's happy. Remember what Prahlad Maharaj says? I'm happy always chanting. I'm not, but he laments, just like Lord Shiva here. So he is in the Rudra Sampradaya, Prabhupada says. So he's the best of Vaishnavas. So now the next verse is very, very important. This next verse proves that, verse 40 proves that Lord Vishnu is supreme and not Lord Shiva. My dear gentle wife Bhavani, one performs benevolent activities for others. The supreme personality of God, Hari, is very pleased. And when the Lord is pleased, I am also pleased, along with all other living creatures. Therefore, let me drink this poison, for all living entities may thus become happy because of me. So the point is, Jiva Goswami says that his conclusion, Lord Shiva's conclusion is, if Hari is pleased, I'll be pleased. So that's why Hari is supreme. He wants to please Hari. He's just thinking, how can I please Krishna? When Durvasa, he gives evidence, Jiva Goswami, from this verse, and then verse 9456 from ninth canto, when Durvasa approaches Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva says, my dear son, we have no influence in front of the Lord. Hundreds and thousands of universes go in and out of his body. Hundreds of people like me are rotating in the universe. Another example is given from fifth canto, 17th chapter, verse 23. Lord Shiva prays to Sankarshan, we are actually like birds whose legs are tied with a rope. Although we may seem to have some power, we are in his control. So this is the position of Lord Shiva. Skanda Purana, Lord Shiva says, one who turns from Lord Vasudeva and worships someone else is a bewildered fool that turns from nectar and drinks the poison, hala hala. So these are some different quotes. Verse 41, Shishukadeva Goswami continued, after informing Bhavani in this way, Lord Shiva began to drink the poison. And Bhavani, who knew perfectly well the capabilities of Lord Shiva, gave him her permission to do so. Thereafter, Lord Shiva, who is dedicated to auspicious, benevolent work for humanity, compassionately took the whole quantity of poison in his palm and drank it. So Prabhupada says he made it small so it will fit in his palm. But don't try to imitate Lord Shiva by drinking poison. And what is the poison that Prabhupada is talking about all the time that people try to imitate?
Smoking
ganja. Don't smoke ganja imitating Lord Shiva. So many purports, he would say, don't try to drink the ocean of poison. If you try to drink even one cup, you'll die. So we don't try to imitate Lord Shiva or imitate Krishna in performing Ras Lila. You cannot imitate. Verse 43, as if in defamation, the poison born from the ocean of milk manifested its potency by marking Lord Shiva's neck with a bluish line. That line, however, is now accepted as an ornament of the Lord. 44, it is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. So who took this method of worship, of accepting suffering? Prabhupada? Jesus Christ? Yes? Prahlad Maharaj? He accepted suffering? Yes? Who? Ganti? Ranti Dev. Okay, Ranti Dev. He was fasting, yes? Huh? Dadichi Muni gave his bones. Yes, what did you say, Adi Purush? I want to accept the sins of everyone, so only I suffer and no one else. Janmashtami. Vasudeva Dutta. Very good. Very good. Okay, so this is the mood of the devotee. Let me suffer. Why should everyone else? Let me. I'll suffer everyone's sins. Everyone's sins. Let me suffer.
Also,
I don't mind. Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Okay, he had that mood when he was leaving his body. And so this is. This verse is memorized. No? This. We wrote it on the board yesterday. 8:23:16 is the verse for memorization. 8:23:16. Okay. So this purport, Prabhupada quotes, Tasyaiva heto prayateta govido na labhyate yad brahmatam upayadha. One should endeavor for that which is never obtained by wandering up and down the universe as a result of reactions of karma. What is that? One should endeavor to become Krishna conscious. One tries to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. He should be understood to be performing the best welfare activity. So this is Prabhupada's mood and mission again. Lord Shiva is an example of this mission, spreading Krishna consciousness. This is the best welfare activity. Of course. So verse 45. Upon hearing of this act, everyone, including Bhavani, daughter of Maharaj Daksha, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and the people in general, very highly praise this deed performed by Lord Shiva, who is worshipped by the demigods and who bestows benedictions upon the people. Scorpions, cobras, poisonous drugs, and other animals, this is the last verse, whose bites are poisonous, took the opportunity to drink whatever little poison had fallen and scattered from Lord Shiva's hand while he was drinking. Okay, now here's another qualification here from verse 31. Bhakti Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami. So these are verses praising Lord Shiva. Brahman Effulgence verse again. So Jiva Goswami explains, the impersonalists and devotees in Shantaras think other deities are equal to Lord Narayan. These statements are for those on the Jnana Marg. To understand all is Brahman, they hear Shiva, Brahma, and Vishnu are equal. They are told this as they must learn Samadarshan, equality of vision. Okay. So this is, now I have one more very interesting comment from Liladhar Gupta on the poison and the nectar. So I took his class in Ayurveda. So Liladhar Gupta, Dr. Gupta says, Allopathic Western medicine is based on the poison which came from churning the ocean of milk. And the nectar is Ayurvedic medicine, is based on the nectar. So it's very, very... very interesting advertisement for Ayurvedic medicine. It's the nectar, huh? Yes, Dhanvantari came out, yes. So this is obvious proof. Who is carrying the nectar? Dhanvantari. The beginning of the Ayurvedic system. He's carrying the nectar. So the nectar is Ayurvedic medicine. And the poison is allopathic medicine. And it's true, actually. You see, you read any allopathic, you see all the reactions you get if you take it. So then I have another interesting point here. This is Navadvip Mahatmya. So in the back of this book, there are a couple of chapters, or a few chapters, which are called Ananta Samhita. So this Ananta Samhita was spoken by Sankarshan, and of course Lord Shiva got it because he's a devotee of Lord Sankarshan. And he was speaking it to Parvati. And this Ananta Samhita is glorifying Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauranga. So here in this page, this is the end of it. This is the Ananta Samhita. Oh, merciful Gauranga, I wish to see you once again in the future in the form which enjoys pastimes in Vrindavan. The Lord said, oh, Ananta, I'm satisfied with your service because you are the first among the best devotees. For this reason, when I appear in Navadvip, you will appear as my best servant. Then he tells the glories of Navadvip. Oh, fortunate one, when I appear in person for the benefit of the populace, you will also appear. I do not tolerate separation from you even for a moment. Therefore, in another age, I take you as my elder brother in Vrindavan. So then he's talking about Nityananda. Lord Shiva said, O Parvati, being ordered by the Lord in this way, Ananta offered his obeisances to the Lord and composed this great Samhita which gives prema bhakti. When Ananta offered this Samhita at the lotus feet of the Lord, he felt great satisfaction. Since this work was full of the Lord's infinite pastimes and it came from the mouth of Ananta, the Lord called this work Ananta Samhita. My dear Parvati, one time in Vaikuntha, the Lord gave this Samhita to Brahma for the benefit of all the worlds. Later, in another kalpa, here's what we should hear. He mercifully gave it to me when I was overcome from drinking poison. So Lord Shiva, he got a reaction from drinking the poison. So how did he counteract it? As my mouth was burning with the poison, I took this nectarian Samhita in my mouth. Ananta Samhita. O Parvati, since that time I've been constantly reciting this Samhita along with the auspicious mantra of Gauranga's name. Being purified by this, I am considered the best of devotees. I am now satisfied, having been freed from the sinful reactions due to creating the atheistic Mayavad scriptures which criticize Krishna. So while he was getting the poison in his mouth, he got Ananta Samhita, and that counteracted the burning of the poison. Now this is from Navadvip Mahatmya. Told by Lord Shiva himself. It's quoting Lord Shiva. So we'll stop here. If you have any questions or comments? We had to go through quite quickly because of the time limitation. Yes?
Why?
Or how? Oh, we have that in the Prabhupada's purport. They were thinking, the logic of snake and mouse, that we will... Yes, these demigods are weak. Prabhupada said in the purport that they're weak. So we've already conquered. We've taken away everything from them. So if we work together, we will certainly get the nectar. We'll just defeat them. And they did. They tried. They snatched the nectar. Actually, they did it. They snatched it. And they weren't good. You think they were going to give some to the demigods? I don't think so.
So they planned to cheat.
Yes, they planned to cheat, actually.
But
yes. But... So the demons, they in their mind, they were thinking, yeah, these demons are so weak, we got the heavenly planets real easily, and we will get the nectar. Now, you know, we're on a roll. We're going to get the nectar as well from these weak demigods. So they agreed, of course. It's very good. They are in the superior position, looks like. Yes, we got the heavenly planets. We deserve the nectar. Who lives in the heavenly planets? They should get the nectar. Any other question? Yes? Sadashiva, no, Lord Shiva, wanted to have darshan of Lord Vishnu, so he meditated for 7 centuries
on
Mahavishnu.
Because we are one in the same.
So Lord Vishnu appeared, says, no need for you to meditate, we're one and the same.
And then
so they embraced.
Mm-hmm.
And they merged.
And they became
Harihara. In Mayapur, there's Aditi Harihara. Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva embracing and
yes.
Becoming merged.
And this is
Advaita Acharya. Harihara. Harihara. Okay. And Keshiga.
Half
Vishnu, half Shiva. You can go and see. You can go and offer obeisances and offer prayers to Harihara and Keshigat.
This, actually, this deity was stolen. And,
which one?
Abaiha.
In Mayapur.
In Mayapur.
The dacoits stole Harihara.
They couldn't find some
mm-hmm. So one jackal came to some boys who were playing.
So they were,
he was telling them to follow him, and the boys followed the jackal. He brought him to the deity of Harihara. The police took Harihara.
Yes. And then finally that deity was replaced.
And it was replaced on the altar. Very opulent deity.
This metal is unheard of.
Okay. But that's why they tried to steal him.
This metal is not human.
It's a, they don't know what he's made of.
So
don't tell the scientists.
The deity is back to be seen by everyone.
Yes. Okay. Dhamana Krishna? Oh, yes. So you. Which purport? 24 is that?
31.
Many mantras of Lord Shiva. Okay. Oh, yes, there you go. Bhagavatam has everything, even mantras for Lord Shiva. What are you wondering? Well, that's, you would have to ask Adipurush a question, because he has access to the Acharya's commentaries. No, Prabhupada really expanded it. So he says they're mentioned by the Acharyas, but not in this form. So where did Prabhupada get all these mantras from? Okay, so maybe some other Acharya. Not Vishwanath and not who? Sridhar Swami. Okay. Not Jiva Goswami. Tantric arrangement of these mantras. Okay, so it's not the mantras themselves, because there's dot, dot, dot after each one, but it's the worship of the mantras. Oh, boy. And so these mantras, Adi Purush knows about these mantras, that they are something very special here, but he's not going to tell us what happens if you chant them, because we might try, get ourselves in trouble. That we don't know. Prabhupada is giving example. So he's showing that this is what these other people are. Mayavadis take these mantras seriously. These are the Mayavadi mantras. You don't have to go read the Mayavadis books. You can see them right here in Bhagavatam. Yes.
The second offense is mentioned to be considering Shiva.
And Shiva's name is different from Vishnu's. Acha. A different translation. Usually we hear it the other way, to see the demigods as equal to Vishnu, but now...
Or independent.
Sometimes
forget that it can be translated both ways.
Mm-hmm. Or independent of Lord Vishnu. Okay, if you think they are different and useless, that's an offense. Yes. Okay. He's Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. He's the greatest Vaishnava. You cannot disregard Lord Shiva. That's why we hear all these beautiful prayers in Bhagavatam by Lord Shiva. How he's the greatest Vaishnava. How he understands the incarnations of the Lord. Yes. Okay, so that's what this quote was all about. Taking all of Vishnu, Shiva as one is the habit of Shanta Bhaktas. And we hear this all over India. Yes, Vishnu, Shiva, Krishna... I have them all on my altar. All one. Yes. What's the problem? What's the difference? Yes, Shanta Bhaktas. Because they want to see equally, equal vision, right? They want to see everything. So, yes, Shiva, Vishnu, equal vision. Yes. Any other? Yes.
Seven.
What were they drinking in the sixth manvantara? They were drinking nectar in the sixth manvantara?
Amaras.
Well, if the nectar didn't come until here.
Uh-huh.
Okay, in Mahabharata it says that the nectar was lost. Yeah, it seems like the moon was lost too. Because the moon's coming out again. So they're churning the ocean. Lakshmi was lost. The moon was lost. The horse was lost. Indra's elephant. So they're churning to get everything back again. Okay, that's a nice explanation that it was lost. Yes. So the question is this happening in every kalpa, the churning of the ocean of milk? Is history repeating itself? Yes. We have these incarnations, they're regular, karma, matsya. They're happening all the time, every kalpa, as far as I understand. Anyway, his question was different. His question was different. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? No? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.